You're listening to highlights from the Creative Processes interview with Intimacy Coordinator Ita O'Brien. This podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation.
And in the intimate content, actually just lifting the lid, gradually developing a professional process and procedures in order to engage with all of those elements so that someone can personally be taken care of, so that professionally they can give their best of themselves, so we can mitigate that risk of someone being touched in a place that hasn't been agreed or being asked to take a garment of clothes off. There's so many stories, but a young actress was saying that she had agreed that she would wear her bra, that she was not comfortable to do an intimate scene with naked breasts. So that was agreed, but the director kept on saying, "Oh, I keep on catching the bra in the take. I keep on catching, just take your bra off." And in that moment, this is way before intimacy coordination, in that moment, that actress then either is going no and feeling that they're being a troublemaker, or being a diva and being awkward and being considered not being brave and not therefore being a good actor. Those are all the confluated assumptions that were leveled at an actor if they weren't comfortable and there wasn't a professional forum for them to be able to call their boundaries. That is an injury, but that injury is emotion, that feeling of being coerced, of being shamed, of going home and your gut ringing. That is the injury. That's emotional, psychological injury that should not be happening, and that thankfully the process allows us to make sure that doesn't happen. It's been a very organic journey and one that still surprises me. And I feel so grateful for the journey that life has taken me on and subsequently the creation of this work. So I was a dancer and then a musical theatre performer, professionally trained as an actor, and then did the MA in movement studies at Central and worked as a movement teacher and a movement director. And then during that time, I was exploring my own theatre work and put on my own play called April's Fool. And then was looking at exploring the dynamic of the perpetrator and the victim. And I started doing some research and development in a studio with actors, bringing the resource material, sharing it with my actors, and then asking them to pick out what resounded with them. And my awareness was in asking actors to explore challenging material, how do I hold a really good rehearsal process to allow my actors to be supported, to be present with themselves, with each other, so they could explore these dynamics of the perpetrator and the victim in a really healthy way. And at the end of that rehearsal process, how do we step away from that in a really healthy way? So that was my core focus in August of 2014. I was teaching at some of the major drama schools in London. And one of my colleagues, Meredith Dufton, who's the head of movement at Mountain View, said, "Please come and teach what you're developing." And that was April 2015. And so I started teaching this professional structure. So early of 2017, I took the work to Equity in October of 2017. Weinstein allegations happened, the industry saying we have to do better, the creations of the codes of conduct. And in that environment, the industry was ready to listen. And I was there saying, within your intention to work with best practice, this is how we work with intimate content. And by then I'd written it into the structure of the Intimacy Onset Guidelines and was speaking about the work. And then 2018, Gentleman Jack, Sex Education and Watchmen were the first three productions that I worked on as an intimacy practitioner. The awareness in the industry with acknowledging the injury from all those who came forward around the Weinstein allegations, that the injury, of course, when someone's coerced into doing something, or, you know, their career being threatened, is emotional and psychological injury. And before that, that of course it's really clear if you've got a stunt and someone's going to be jumping from roof to roof and they might fall down the cracks and, you know, break an ankle, then of course the producers need to mitigate for that risk and put in place everything so that that risk that you can perceive might happen, you know, is mitigated. And the thing is that for years people spoke about how awkward it was or embarrassing to perform the intimate content. And what they're speaking about is feeling horrible. If something's awkward, it feels, isn't it? That squirm, that ring in the body. If it feels embarrassing, again, that actually an emotion that is not professional, that is not allowing the actor to stay feeling listened to, heard, empowered, autonomous, and so that they can just get on without any of those concerns and do their job to their best of ability. And that's the awareness that we brought. So we're saying, which is not suitable in our workplace for anybody to feel harassed or abused.
Sex education, so many of your notable projects are really documenting a kind of sexual awakening. And so dealing with young actors.
That was so interesting, wasn't it? That both the subject, the writing of the work was about consent and that open conversation and lifting the lid, sex education in particular. Well, and then Gentleman Jack as well, in the lifting the lid of this amazing character of Anne Lister, from history. So I felt so grateful to be working on content that had the question of consent and open conversation at its core, particularly with sex education. But then also, in, like I say, from my very first conversation with Ben Taylor and John Jennings, was us, you know, saying it's a young cast exploring in-depth intimate content. And they're saying, we know that we need to be able to really support our young cast, and came to me. And then I shared how we could journey through that. So there was a real awareness of intention to take care, understanding of the challenges of working with such exposing intimate scenes. But also, you know, all of us, our children were young at the time, also saying that we're aware that our young people are turning to pornography because there isn't an alternative out there in order to explore how to, you know, and saying this could be an alternative, or gives a, you know, a piece of art in a TV series that will help our young people to actually ask those questions and to have those questions answered, and for it to be a positive thing out in the world in that place.
I heard Lenny Abraham, director of the TV show Normal People, who said your work helped them, rather than stifling the creative expression, and you're finding ways to bring out the humor, to make scenes even sexier.
So absolutely, with Lenny and with all the different intimate journey of Marianne and Connell, and then also at the time that they went off with their different partners. So those early scenes when it was Marianne's sexual awakening, we were looking at her discovery in her body, what the physicality would be for those first scenes. But then as they've both gone to university and had other partners, and so they understand their bodies more, they're more sexually experienced. So when they came back together at those intimate scenes, that's what we had, that lovely him opening her gown and kissing her belly, and that their physical expression was use more body parts and open that more because both of them were more sexually experienced. And then the final section when they've both gone off and Marianne's characters engage more with BDSM explorations of intimacy. So that's just the joy of being able to bring that detail in and chart it, and to make sure that we're really honouring Sally Rooney's writing and bringing that detail that really tells a good story.
You've also worked on I May Destroy You, where you had to navigate quite sensitive territory. And I know that Michaela Cole dedicated a part of her BAFTA award to you for the places that you charted together emotionally.
Yes, that was such a privilege to work with Michaela Cole, just to be witness and to support her amazing creative process as writer, as it being part of her life story. Those kind of storytellings are really important. They're told with full-on emotional content that has been intended. We don't want to have to pull back from really showing the ugly side of our humanity if there's really challenging intimate scenes. But how do we make sure, as Michaela said, that we can create a story about abuse without anybody being abused in the process? I co-work with an artist wellbeing practitioner so that if somebody is activated, I can help to recognize that in my check-ins with them. So that's where I say my connection with the producer is in putting in place best practice across the whole production. It's not just about the director and the actors who are performing it, but we have no idea, and nor should we have any idea, who of the cast and crew might also be activated by that content. We've got no idea what their life stories have been. So we need to put out a warning that there's this kind of intimate content in a week's time, to invite anybody that if they feel that they might be challenged by it, to be able to come forward, that they will be treated with respect.
I was wondering what some of those conversations might have been, say on It's a Sin, which follows a group of gay men and their friends during the HIV/AIDS crisis.
That production was really close to my heart because I was a musical theatre dancer in the 80s. And so that was something that I personally had lived through and really understood. You know, I was that kid at the Pineapple Dance Studios, and gradually as friends around me sort of began to become unwell. And actually one of the first people that I knew who died from HIV was my singing teacher at the time, a guy called Chris Edwards, who I would like to really honour in this podcast. And so he was the first person that contracted HIV that I knew, and he died within 18 months. So Russell T. Davis was there, Peter Hoare, the amazing director, and myself were of the generation who had lived through this. But for the young cast, it was something that was about history. And so both doing that work of really exploring it. And also then there was a cast member for whom the experience of HIV was a lived experience. So also, you know, supporting that, the producer coming to me and saying this particular cast member is actually someone who is living with HIV. So we had a really clear rehearsal process that I oversaw, and then I worked with two fantastic intimacy practitioners who were both under mentorship at that point in time, Elma Kelpine and David Thackeray. My realization is that in our existence as human beings, who we love and how we love them is a pinnacle, isn't it? Who we love, we're all seeking for that and finding a partner. And then our expression with that loved one is the most beautiful part of who we are as human beings. And that is a private act. It should be private and it should stay private. Who are these characters? What are these characters in their intimate expression? And then really being able to focus on then that character in relationship. For example, I worked on a lovely production with Alice Englert and Nicholas Denton playing Dangerous Liaisons. So the character of Camille is a professional prostitute and the character of Valmont is a way a professional cad and he earns his money by seducing different women. And a lot of what we spoke about, you know, was the character of Valmont, that he would find out what each woman's vulnerability was and then respond to that. So we looked how he's a chameleon and how he gives each different woman what they want. And that's part of my job that I love, that I find joyous. We're looking at who's this character and then what's this character's physical expression. And then keeping that idea of working professionally, but still being able to be detailed and precise. What tools can we look at as the actor in order to really bring details? Any intimate choreography or intimate scene with two people is a body dance. You've got two people moving in rhythm together, telling a physical storytelling. So just like a good fight or just like a good tango, it's a body dance. And so we want time to rehearse. So then we'll look at when that time is. We'll get together with the director and the actors. The director again interrogates the script. And I will just be present, listening and observing that actor-director conversation as they agree the basic shape of the scene. And then I will support the facilitation of them getting that up on its feet, checking out touch, putting in place really clear choreography. So then it means that the actor can go away. Their bodies have got an understanding of the rhythm and the shape of the scene. Our young people are turning to TikTok and YouTube and Instagram as their way of engaging with the world. And so we have to know that. And then how do we share our storytelling in those formats? And that's what we want as human beings. We want, as it were, that glitch, that someone's take on something that surprises us and makes us re-question and elevates. And that can't happen with AI. For our art, for our storytelling, what the actor brings to it should be really respected, and the skill and the art of our artists, of our actors and directors and our writers, what each individual brings to each part of the creative process has to, as human beings, that's what we need to stay honoring and respecting, and knowing that there can be a place for AI, but we should never take out the human being from the whole process.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to these highlights. To listen to the latest episodes or learn more about participating in exhibitions or interviews, click on subscribe. Thank you for listening.